Welcome to the Plastic Surgery Podcast with your host, Mike Campion. From breasts, bellies, and Botox to tummy tucks, butt lifts, and mommy makeovers, we uncover it all for you. Listen in on interviews with real-life patients, top-notch surgeons, and industry experts. You're going to hear about costs, recovery times, what to expect, risks, rewards, and all sorts of behind-the-scenes access to all things cosmetic surgery. Whether you want a new look, a little more confidence, or just a flat-out feel better, you're in the right place.
Welcome, Plastic Surgery Nation, to today's installment of All Things Cosmetic Surgery. Remember to help make the show great by emailing your questions, comments, and rude remarks to me at mike@plasticsurgerypodcast.com. You can also call the Plastic Surgery Hotline at 888-636-8266. And last but certainly not least, tell your friends, tell your enemies, family members, strangers passing in the street just how much you love Plastic Surgery Podcast. Today, we're going to talk with John Ross. John's plastic surgery journey started with a staggering 250-pound weight loss. He was left with significant extra skin and reached out to another guest of the Plastic Surgery Podcast, Dr. Ellen Janetsky, who was kind enough to introduce us. John is excited to share his story, and I got to tell you, I am so excited to hear it. John, say hello to Plastic Surgery Nation.
Hello, Plastic Surgery Nation.
All right. I always love, you know, doctors are great and they've got so much information, but I'd love talking to people that have actually been on the before end of the surgery, the during, and the how, you know, kind of what's going on, the feelings and emotions then, and then the after as well. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we do that, I think Plastic Nation would love to hear a little bit about you. Where do you live? Are you married? Do you have kids? What do you do in your spare time? All that good stuff.
Well, actually, no, I'm not married, but I am looking for a nice gentleman over 40. I'm 60 years old, and I am single, but I am looking.
Duly noted. All of you people looking to connect with John, check out his show notes page. Go ahead, John.
There you go. Well, I'm 5'5". And I was morbidly obese my whole life. I was on many, many diets starting at an age of 6 years old with pills that were prescribed for me by doctors. As an example, in ninth grade, I was 5'4½", and I weighed in at 307 pounds. So to say the least that I was overweight is an understatement. I had had bariatric surgery actually in 1982. At that time, they did what was called stapling of the stomach. They no longer do it. So I had actually a lot of problems as a result of that procedure. I had two bowel obstructions, so my health was in declining mode. And at 56 years of age, I found a doctor that would redo the whole thing for me, my abdomen and my scar, my lesions in my insides and the whole thing. And he gave me bariatric surgery. I had a complete Roux-en-Y, which is called a complete bypass.
So real quick, when you got your first stomach staple, how old were you and what were the results? Did you get any positive results?
Yeah, there was in 1982 and I weighed in at 427 pounds. I lost approximately 100 pounds from that, but there was really no aftercare, or I really didn't have my heart and soul in it at that time. I thought it was just going to be a solution to losing weight. Bariatric surgery is not to be taken lightly. It's a tool which to work with. That's it. And depending on what you want to do with it, there have been many examples of people that have had bariatric surgery that have gained weight as a result after they've done it. I've been very fortunate that I've taken it very seriously and I've used it as a tool, but every day it's you have to work at it. It's like anything else that's going to be successful. You have to work at it. And as a result of losing over 250 pounds, I had a lot of extra skin. Under my arms were very saggy, my abdomen, my chest. I had male breasts, so I had a lot of saggy skin. As a result of that, I
So did you get the saggy skin after the second? So the first surgery you had was a staple stomach. You were over 400 pounds. You still lost 100 pounds, but you're still overweight.
I was over 500 pounds when I started my second bariatric surgery, and that was in May of 2011.
Okay, so from 1982 to 2011, you went from over 400 pounds to a low of like low 300s and then back up to 500.
Over 500.
Over 500. Okay. So were you ambulatory at the 500 pounds, or were you kind of bedridden?
You know what? I was pretty immobile a lot of times. I walked with a cane, and I was pretty immobile. So I didn't have a lot of ambition or any of that.
Did you have family to care for you, or did you live alone, or how'd you?
A little bit of both. I lived alone. I've always lived alone, which is my preference at that time. And, you know, when you have a disease, and obesity is a disease in itself, you hide a lot of shame and guilt about that. So I decided to just, at one point, I didn't go out of the house for long periods of time and things like that. Just stayed in.
And it seems like it would kind of compound on itself, because I don't know about you, but for me, when I get bummed out or depressed, a lot of times I'll be like, well, it's time to eat. I'll change my mood that way. And if you're not going out, you get more depressed, and it's just a big nasty circle.
Exactly. And not only that, you become dependent on sugar, salt, things like that, which are bad for your system to begin with, and instead of the fruits and vegetables or things that help you along to lose weight. So it just compounds itself. You're absolutely correct.
So in 2011, what happened in your life where you just said, that's enough, I won't live like this anymore, I got to do something different?
What happened? My father passed away. And as a result of that, I ended up looking at myself very seriously and saying, and looking at my mortality seriously and saying, is this what I want to do? And being 56 years old, I said, no, I want to change everything about it. So I took it very hard. I lost my father, and I decided to change it. So I had sought out doctors across the country that would do bariatric surgery or do something to help me, and because of my history with my surgeries in the past, there was no doctor that would take me on except an associate of Dr. Ellen's, actually.
So before this last kind of surgery in 2011, that sounds like it's worked and you're getting results. How many surgeries had you had prior to that?
Well, the first one I had was actually the bariatric surgery in 1982. Then I had a bowel obstruction, which they opened me up again. And you got to remember, each time they opened you up from stem to stern, from navel to mid-chest. So that was in 1998. And then again, I had a second bowel obstruction in 2001. And then when they did the bariatric surgery in 2011, that was when they opened me up again. And then when I had my tummy tuck and my abdomen redone in 2013, Dr. Ellen, in tandem, worked with a surgeon to reorganize my whole abdomen.
The two surgeries that you had after 1982, before 2011, weren't to help you lose weight or to control your weight.
Not at all. They were just to keep me functioning.
Totally medical.
Bowel obstruction, nothing flows through your body. And at each time, they only gave me 20% chance to 25% chance of making it through surgery.
Wow. But it was a life-threatening surgery. You couldn't opt out.
Oh, totally. Okay. I had no choice.
Okay.
I had no choice. Both times when the anesthesiologist and the doctors came in to talk to you before surgery, you had to sign documents stating that they are not responsible for your demise.
Well, that's got to be a scary, scary point in your life.
Oh,
twice.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And I had actually made up my mind after 2001 that I was not going to have any form of surgery again. I was just going to let my life play out and my demise just go through. And here I am in 2015, alive, well, and doing better than ever.
And an unobstructed bowel.
Exactly.
Now I understand. So at first when you said no doctor would touch you, I thought maybe you'd had multiple surgeries that didn't work and they didn't want to be a part of it. But it sounds like you just had the
there
one
was
surgery.
A lot of scar, a lot of scar tissue.
And
I had a lot of herniation in my abdomen.
So what? How? Who did you find, and how? What made them say, you know what, I'm going to, I hate to say it like this, but I'm going to take a chance on you and try and help you, even though it might be a bad outcome?
Actually, it was, his name's Dr. Kevin Krause. He's out of Beaumont Hospital in Detroit area, Troy, Michigan. And he did the surgery on me, but prior to that, he set up certain goals for me. I had to lose almost 100 pounds prior to the surgery, because when you're on the operating table, he felt it would be 99% chance that he would have to open me up. See, most bariatric surgery today is done laparoscopically. So he felt with my history, I would have to be opened up 100%.
When you found him, you were 500 pounds, and he said, you lose 100, and then we'll talk.
Correct.
Wow, okay.
Correct.
So how long did it take? What made? I mean, that's the trick. I mean, good Lord, it seems like you did a lot of the work there. For 100 pounds, how long did it take? What did you do, and what motivated you to do it?
It took me about 9 months.
Wow, that's quick.
And, you know, when you're immobile, I just really started walking. He wanted me to get up to, I was, my first walking experience, because that's what really helped, because I had bad knees and hips, of course. But to go into any pool, I didn't have any access to anything like that. So I was doing about 250 to 300 steps a day, and then I got up to 1,200 within 4 months, and then I was doing 2,400. The average person walks about 10,000 steps a day. So that tells you where I was at. And so it was a slow climb, but I was diligent in that I was going to do it, and I did do it.
So was it harder to do the movement and the walking and the exercise part of it, or was it harder to control what you ate?
Both.
Yeah, sounds like the right answer.
Both, because neither one of them were my favorite things to do, you know, and I had to do both. At several times, I was going to give up, and I also, you know, you can change your physiology, your physical part of something, but you can't change your mental part of it. That's the hardest. So I was seeing a psychologist, that's a psychiatrist at the time, that was helping me, and I was also involved in group therapy to help me with my eating disorder and some other things. You know, you don't get to be 550 pounds because you're hungry. You get to be 500 pounds and morbidly obese because there's so many other things. And sometimes that compound themselves just strictly because of the obesity factor. You know, there's a lot of, when you walk into a place and people see you as a 5'5", 500-pound person, you're looked at very differently than walking in 5'5", weighing 180 pounds.
Certainly.
So, you know, it's people always judge you on your appearance, first of all. The first thing they look at is who you are, no matter what you're doing, whether you're going in for a supermarket, going in to buy clothes, going in for a job interview, or just going in to have a cup of coffee in the Starbucks. People are judging you continuously on your appearance. So that's why the clothes industry is a multi-billion dollar. That's why the cosmetic industry is a multi-billion dollar. And that's why the plastic surgeon is a multi-billion dollar operation. Because people continuously judge you on your appearance. Your appearance is your calling card. That's the way I look at it.
Well, and how much of that judgment, so to speak, comes from within? I think we probably have, I know for me, I make judgments on my appearance as well. I mean, how much self-talk did you have?
Totally. Well, there comes a point, too, for me, and I can't speak for everybody else, but where you just look at yourself as an entity of nothingness. So, you know, you really downplay who you are as a person. Your self-esteem is low. And as a child, being harassed and bullied and ridiculed as from the time I was in first grade, you know, being overweight till the time I graduated from high school, I was judged and bullied and made fun of.
Do you have any encouragement for those that are in that space, whether it be in high school or in adult life, dealing with that?
You can tell a person and talk to them till you're blue in the face, and they can say, yeah, I know what it's like, I agree with you. but until a person finds their own self-centeredness of comfort, nobody can tell you anything. The only thing I can say is that stick with some sort of support system that you have a lot in common with, and be diligent about those people on a constant basis. As an example, I have a support group I talk to daily, friends. On by 9 o'clock in the morning, I've talked to 3 people. By the time I get up usually about 6:37, and I talk to 3 people that are encouraging me on a daily basis that support me. And it doesn't necessarily have to be talking about my weight or working out or going to this or that. It's just I know that they're there if I need to talk to them about things that are serious.
Okay.
And so I have a great support system at this point that I work with on a daily basis. Any type of success comes from support. You didn't get to be, Donald Trump didn't get to be successful because of who he was. He was successful because of the people he surrounded himself with.
And I think it's kind of a chicken and the egg. The successful people tend to surround themselves with like-minded people, and the people that struggle tend to alienate themselves or surround themselves with negative people that aren't going to help them get their goals.
Exactly.
So when you did make that, this it sounds like your big turning point was 2011.
Well, actually, it was 2010 as when the journey started.
That's right. Yeah, because you said that you got the surgery in 2011, but you had to prepare for almost a year just by losing weight. Was it something where there was a specific day that you can recall and go, that was a day? Or was it kind of a period of months where you slowly came to the realization of this is really it?
Well, I don't think that it was a specific day. It wasn't a culmination of therapy and allowing me to see how I had been, how my life, but I don't want to go into too much personal issues because there was a lot of background from my childhood, but there was an epiphany at one point where I said, you know what, I really screwed up my life and I need to change this. So I asked myself, do I want to continue on this journey where I'm at, or do I want to forge ahead into a different road and pattern? At some point in life, people come to a fork in the road. I firmly believe that, and you either have to decide which road you want to take. A lot of people choose not to take the road because it's too much work. And anything that's successful takes a lot of work, and it's always easier to take the other path. And people, in general, don't like to take a path that's a lot of work. And you know what? In truth, the road that's a lot of work becomes easier and easier. It's like a car that you're pushing up a hill. You push it up the hill, but it goes down the hill at one point and it becomes easier. So you just have to get momentum going. And once you get that momentum going, it works out itself.
That's a great point. So, all right. So it sounds like you how big, because there's the medical side of it in terms of physically getting your stomach, cut open and done right. There's the mental part of I've got to physically stop eating these foods and start eating these foods. There's a physical part of I got to do some movement. And then there's kind of the mental, emotional part of I've got to surround myself with a team of people aside from the doctor and the nurses of kind of my mind coaches. Is that everybody in the team, or is there more still?
Yeah, there's a whole thing you have to work. Well, and there's, if you surround yourself with successful people, they will help you to determine what is best for you. I mean, it's not an overnight thing that comes along and says, oh, you do this, this, and this. Everybody has their own steps they take to achieve certain things. And you have to take it, I believe, where you feel comfortable. But you also have to push yourself. As an example, for me to go to the gym, I was petrified to walk into any gym, period, and look at people. And because I thought they're going to judge me. Here I am obese at this point, and I've got to start working out in the gym. That was part of my plan. So I promised myself that I would go for 2 weeks. I joined Planet Fitness, and I went for 2 weeks and sat on a bench and watched people. I didn't do anything at all, but I made a commitment to myself that I would observe people. I would go at the same time every day, and I would observe people. And what I observed was that the people you see that are fit people, that have muscles, that walk around looking like they work out all the time, they are just as afraid of everything and as inhibited about their appearance as you are. And I said to myself, self, they're looking in the mirror at themselves just like I'm looking in the mirror at myself, and they're looking at other people. And it's interesting when you start to watch people that you think in your own mind, oh, God, they're just self. They don't worry about it. They eat everything. No, it's not true. They follow a regimen that they have to work on a daily basis. And they're just as afraid. And then when you start talking to some of these people, you get to feel what they're feeling and know how they've achieved it. And I'd ask them, you know, what did you do to do this? What did you do to do that? And you find out that a lot of them have a lot in common, that they were obese as children, that they were overweight as children, that they were overweight, they gained weight in college, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of similarities. Everybody is just trying to get through life on a daily basis the best they can, is what I've found out. And how you get there and how you determine to do it, everybody takes that journey differently. For me, right now, it's just getting through on a daily basis and maintaining the weight I'm at. So, and, you know, feeling good about where I'm at. People looking at me as a, for lack of a better term, not as a freak show, you know. So, and that's kind of harsh, but it's kind of true. When you walk into a place and everybody's, you know, you go to a restaurant, you have to sit in a certain seat because you might break the chair. You have to sit in this place because you don't want people to look at you funny, what you're eating. People are always judging you.
Yeah, and I think that's got to be, just like we talked about before, kind of a downward spiral of they judge so you don't go out and be in public, which is what you need, and then
it
just gets worse and worse and worse. Exactly. So you made kind of a small point earlier I wanted to ask about and we don't have to talk about you personally, of course, but just in your dealings with other people, especially you've been in counseling, I'm assuming you've been with people that have had similar issues that you've got with weight. Have you found a consistent pattern or theme of something happening in childhood that was difficult or traumatic and that kind of...
Well, I think the trauma is what is called today bullying. In my day, there was no such thing as bullying. It was, they made fun of you. You know, so and that weighs heavy on a person developing in their mental picture of who they are. And I think everybody goes through a certain portion of it at some point, but it depends on how. I think a lot of it revolves around your family life and where you're at and how you deal with it.
So fast forward, we've talked about a lot of the difficulties and just where you were, and I really appreciate sharing that because I know there's people out there listening.
No problem.
That just, they need to hear that, and they don't have that in their lives, so I really think you're speaking
into
that.
The bottom line is get a great support group and surround yourself with successful people.
That is, I'm going to put that in the show notes because that is really wise. So let's forward to the kind of the good part, so to speak. Tell me about the big day. So you finally found a doctor that said, I'm willing to help you, and B, I can help you, but you've got this massive goal of losing 100 pounds, which you did. Tell me about the day of surgery. Were you excited? Were you scared? I'm sure a little bit of both. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I was very, scared is an understatement because it was a beginning of a journey that I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And, you know, they come in and they say, you know, have you ever had surgery? If you've ever had surgery, the doctors come in, the anesthesiologist comes in, and then they take you back to prep you, and there's a whole protocol to the situation. Then they wheel you into the surgery room, and surgery rooms are very cold, actually, if people don't know that. I don't know if you're aware of that or not, but it stops the blood flow. So that's why they put a warm blanket on you usually. Anyway, you go in and then you start, the next thing you know is you're out. and then the next thing you know is you're being woken up so many hours later.
So before the surgery, you said that the bowel obstruction surgery, you had like a 20-25% chance of surviving. So that had to be really terrifying. Was it scarier? I mean, where was it in comparison to these? Because this is now elective. You don't have to do it today. So compare those for me.
Well, with a bowel obstruction, there's nothing passing through your bowel. So what happens is, and I don't want to be graphic, but if you're sick, you're throwing up and you're throwing up feces.
Oh.
Is what happens because it can't go through your body. So for a period of time until they do the surgery, you're continuously, everything you've eaten over the last 36 hours is coming up. And it's a nightmare. And you can actually die from the poisons just from that period.
So at that point, probably like, I don't care, I just need to get this fixed.
I didn't care at that point. Like,
sure.
Just do what you have to do.
Sure.
I'm over this.
Yeah,
you're not even in a real world. Everything just seems kind of floating because the toxins have taken over your brain, your blood, your oxygen,
okay.
Everything. Nothing's working properly in your body.
So this one is a little different. It's not as dire, but still a scary thing. You wake up. Do you feel, are you in pain? Are you excited? Do you feel the same?
The next thing I wanted to know is what happened.
Sure.
So then they said, you were 6 hours in surgery. So my first surgery for that was 6 hours. And because there was a lot of scar tissue, which he had to take out, and then he had to do the actual surgery itself, and then he had to put me back together. And I had 27 staples that went down my abdomen. And I knew I was going from the hospital into a nursing care facility. I had already made arrangements for that. But he wanted to keep me in the hospital to first see if there was anything flowing, because he wasn't even sure as a doctor that my abdomen, abdominal, and my bowel movements would work properly. And it's at that point, you're not eating anything. You're just eating ice chips and no food, but they want you to pass gas and urinate and things like that. And actually, for 3 days, nothing was working. So he wasn't even sure that the surgery was a success because I had a lot of scar tissue. And when you have scar tissue in your abdomen, it wraps around the whole inside of your organs and everything. So we had to literally go in and clean everything up and then put it back in. And, you know, when you have that much fat around things, you have to be very careful because you want it to work properly. So it's almost like a Frankenstein or a sci-fi movie thing that he's doing. Thank God I didn't see any of it. But as a result, for me personally, because it was so extensive, I was in the hospital for 5 days. Then I was transported by ambulance to a nursing care facility. They laid you out and took you, and it took four people to lift me into the ambulance and four people to lift me out. And these are EMT workers, emergency technicians, because there was that much weight. They wheeled me into the facility, and of course they were prepared for me being a big person, with an oversized bed that could accommodate me and all of that. And what tends to happen is because you're on saline, your body fills up with fluids. So actually, I was heavier after surgery than I was before surgery because of the fluid retention. And then I was in there, and what had happened for me personally, my story is a little different in the fact that I had a lot of abdominal problems. I got an infection from the sutures. And that can happen when you have that much opening. When my whole scar was almost 23 inches long, and that's a big surgery. So it got infected, and he had to open me up and leave. I was with an open wound, and I lived with that for 3.5 months.
Oh, my goodness.
And it had to heal from the inside out. So I had to have what was called a wound vac. I was fortunate enough to have a new process. And it's a wound vac that continuously keeps the wound clean. And it's a filtration kind of a system. It's a machine that you're hooked up to and you have to carry it around. Yeah, it's quite an ordeal. And that was my little story. I convalesced. I was in the nursing home for almost 3.5 weeks, and then I went to my mom's house and recuperated there. And then a nurse came 3 times a week to check my wound. And but for the first month, it had to be changed twice a day. And the wound was about 8 inches, I think 8 inches long and about 6.5 inches deep. And they had to pack it, clean it out with saline, and then pack it every time. And that was twice a day for a month. And then I was able to get funding, because everything, you know, has to go through your medical insurance, to put a wound vac on it, which is like a pump that continuously cleans it. And that cost is $7,000 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
Just for the wound vac, not including the care you have to. That's just for the, and you can't own it, you rent it.
So this experience was somewhat unique to you. It doesn't sound like this is a typical bariatric. It sounds like you kind of had on the worst end of the scale of what's to be expected. Is that fair?
Whatever can happen, go wrong, happened to me.
Okay, so this isn't a typical thing. You just got the bad end of the stick, so to speak.
Well, because I had such a bad bad abdomen. So then this is what will bring me to Dr. Ellen. She had a lot to work with. We're talking about a miracle worker here. Because today I have, I'm able to go swimming and with no shirt on, and I look like whatever normal looks like. Actually, it's funny. I'm kind of fast forwarding, because what had happened was, as a result, everything happened good. I was able to lose weight. I started exercising. And I dropped over 300, almost 275 pounds.
After the initial 100 that you needed to drop before you could get surgery, correct?
No, I dropped 100, and then I dropped about 225 pounds. So for a total of about 325.
325,
350. I weigh in now at between 224 and 228.
That's fantastic. And how long have you been at? How long did it take you to get from the 400 to the 228?
Almost a year and a half, 2 years, and then I've maintained it now for over 2 years.
Fantastic. So now that you've kind of taken us through that, get us to where Dr. Ellen comes in and all the exciting stuff that she was able to do for you.
As a result, because of the wound vac and everything and the stomach, the infection, I had what was called a herniation. So have you ever seen where a person looks like they have a growth growing out of their abdomen? Mine was the size of a basketball.
Oh, my. That must have been very uncomfortable.
Very uncomfortable. And then I had skin hanging on my arms and my abdomen. I mean, it was just a nightmare.
So had you planned, had you had a conversation or any plan about what to do with this extra skin when you went in, or did you just start dealing with this a year or so after?
I knew that eventually I would have to deal with it. I just didn't know how. And Dr. Krauss, which performed the surgery for me, my bariatric surgery, he and Dr. Ellen are actually colleagues, and they knew each other personally at a personal level. But he had given me references for several plastic surgeons, because he had okayed me to have my tummy tucked, because we needed to take care of the herniation. And so at that time, they were just going to do all the extra skin, the apron, and that was going to come off. And so I picked Dr. Ellen because I went online and I looked at her education, her background, educated myself on a lot of her background. And plus, not to be prejudiced, but I kind of felt women tend to be more conscious about how they look than sometimes men do because of makeup, hair. And when I first met her, she had on a pair of great shoes. And I thought, any woman that wears high heels to work like she did is the person I want doing my surgery.
Does she know that? Because that would be, I'm sure she would love to hear that.
I told her that. Please. Dr. Ellen and I are very close friends. We're intimate. But, she had on her little mini skirt and her Manolos, and I said, this is the woman I want.
Yeah.
So that's it. And, you know, when you go in to talk to, because personally what I do, I'm kind of different with doctors that I interview them. So I want to have a consultation with them and see what they're all about. And when you get a guy come in with his white coat on and he's got his loafers on and just looking like, okay, looks at you, blah, blah, blah. But when I saw this woman come in looking like she walked out of Dior's, you know, with her Manolos on or chimichus, I said, she's the one for me. She's going to make me look fabulous. And she did.
Yep. So how many surgeries did you have aesthetically? Was it just the one?
No. Oh, no. I've had. And then I'm going to have. Vanity has kind of set into me, actually, as a result of all this. But I think I deserve a little vanity. Let's see. I started off with my abdomen, first of all. She cut that, and her and I said, Dr. Cross worked in tandem because he had to go in there and fix the herniation. And she did the plastic surgeon, the cosmetic part to the abdomen. And she made it nice and flat. Then I had my arms done, both arms underneath.
And that was one surgery for both arms, right?
One surgery for both arms, yes.
Okay.
Then I had sagging skin on my chest, you know, so I had man boobs and all that extra skin on the side. And so that was another surgery. And then we did a little liposuction afterwards, too, and did some filling here and there where I wanted to do it. And she did that. My next surgery is going to be either a facelift, which is where the vanity comes in, or it's going to be the removal of the extra skin below my waist, my legs, and my thighs.
So is there any reason medically you didn't do all these together? Was it a financial situation or pain? Or
Dr. Ellen does not like to keep you on the table for more than five and a half hours. And my abdomen surgery alone was almost 6.5 hours.
Okay, so medically you just it wouldn't have been sensible to do them more than one of these at a time.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, it's just too much on the table. And it's too much for anybody. Whenever you're on a surgery table for longer than 5.5 to 6 hours, it becomes dangerous because there's just too many other things that can go wrong. Breathing, your heart, yeah, things like that.
Okay, so before we move on to the lightning round, where I'm just going to give you a couple quick questions, what can you share with people going through what you've been through in terms of encouragement or words of warning or just some things that you've learned going through this that they can learn from you?
Well, just remember, it's a journey. Life in itself is a journey. It just depends on what you want to take. You can live your life driving 30 miles an hour down the road, or you can do a roller coaster ride up and down. I like a roller coaster ride a little bit, I guess, and the fact that my life goes up and down in a lot of ways, and I wanted to go in a positive direction at 50 miles an hour, not just rolling along. And, you only have one life to live. You might as well live it the best you can. That's the way I feel. And get a support group. Do your due diligence on doctors. Make sure that they're comfortable, because everybody has a different comfort level. What's comfortable for me is not always comfortable for you. So, you know, do your due diligence on your doctors. Make sure 60% of the doctors that I go to, I feel a connection with on a personal level. Sometimes it's more than that. Like with Dr. Ellen, it's probably a 90%. I mean, it's still a doctor-patient relationship, but at some point, you know, like I walk in, I give her a big hug, we give hugs to each other. And there's not a lot of doctors that do that with their patients. But her and I have established that kind of rapport with each other. But I, with all my doctors, I'm that way. You know, I look at them as friends rather than as a doctor. I understand there's a professional part to it, but there also has to be a comfort level. And there's a comfort level at anything. No matter what relationship you have with a person, if you're not comfortable with them, then you shouldn't be around them.
Well said, from someone that's been there and done that and gone through it. So that said, what's the one thing you wish you would have known then that you know now that you can share with Plastic Surgery Nation?
Take chances in life.
All right. I like that. That's applicable not just for plastic surgery, but just in good life, all-around knowledge.
Take a chance. And you know what? Don't listen to people that tell you no. Just go for it. Because you know what? In the end, when you're laying in that coffin or 6 feet under, guess what you are? A memory. And memories never come back and tell you what they should have done or could have done.
Well said. A fantastic reminder. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Okay, cool. I want to respect your time, so we're going to move into the lightning round. I'm going to give you four quick and easy questions. You can just give four quick answers, and we'll get you on your way, sir. Number one, what is one quick and easy health or beauty tip you've got for Plastic Surgery Nation?
Make sure that you have a good plastic surgeon and that you use scar cream afterwards, because it helps to lighten the scars a lot.
Fantastic feedback. Number two, what's the number one thing you discovered having plastic surgery?
That I'm worth it.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Financially, it doesn't matter, because you're worth it.
All right. I'm putting that in the show notes. Are you worth it? ? Fantastic feedback. What's the number one thing, if you had a friend or family or you want to share with Plastic Surgery Nation, that when you're having cosmetic surgery, say, make absolutely sure that this happens? This is one non-negotiable you got to make absolutely sure you get in your experience.
Do your homework. Make sure you do your homework. You know the options. Make sure you know the aftercare. Aftercare to anything is 100%. If you're not listening to your doctor about the aftercare procedures, you're doing yourself an injustice. I followed everything my doctors told me about aftercare to the T. I did everything they told me, and then I did a little more than they told me. If they told me, do this, I did it. And I even, because when you have abdominal surgery, you have to wear a... for lack of a better term, a girdle type thing to hold it in place a little bit. And usually people wear it for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. I wore it for 6 weeks just because of the comfort level of it.
So listen to your doctor, do what they say. The last question is, what is the number one thing to avoid when considering plastic surgery? You would say, make sure this doesn't happen.
Doesn't happen. I really don't have anything that doesn't happen, because I followed everything. I did it the way I wanted to.
Okay, so do it the way that you want, then you don't have to worry about the bad stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I followed up. I investigated the doctors. I did all the preliminary stuff they asked me to do. I did all the aftercare the way it was meant to do. I looked them up online. I did a lot of work online, actually. Schools they went to, what type of social life they had, because all that's online. You can find a lot of information about a person, especially today with the computers.
Okay.
So I wanted to see what kind of background they came from, what kind of groups they were involved with in college, what kind of academics, what social life. And I think in most professionals, if they're not following a balance, and, you know, when you talk to them, I guess the one thing I would tell people is have a consultation before and talk to them. Bring a series of questions that you need answered in anything you do. I mean, if you're going to go apply for a job or you're going to get involved in a relationship, you want to know the background. You want to know the history. You want to know what advantages there are for you going through this process.
All right. So what I'm hearing is make sure you do your homework. Don't just go in kind of willy-nilly. And then once you've done your homework and you pick the right person, do what they tell you to do. All right. John, thank you for being so generous with your time and your expertise. I appreciate you. Plastic Surgery Nation appreciates you. Plastic Surgery Nation, if you dig the show, make sure you continue the conversation by telling your friends, checking it out at www.plasticsurgerypodcast.com. John's show notes will be on that page where you can get an outline. Maybe he'll send us some pictures so you can kind of get to know him. All sorts of free stuff, tons more content that you need to know if you're even considering plastic surgery. Leave us your questions, your comments, your rude remarks. I will respond to every one of them, and I will see you there.
Congratulations. You now have more of the knowledge you need to get the body you've always dreamed of. Don't forget to subscribe to the show through iTunes or at our website, www.plasticsurgerypodcast.com, where you can check out show notes, the Plastic Surgery blog, and all the other cool stuff that lives there.